as hopefully all you know, you all know, have school immunization requirements and allow medical, religious, and philosophical exemptions to that requirement. In Oregon, we call it a religious exemption, and essentially, though, it's allowed for any system of beliefs, practices, or ethical values. In comparison, to give you an idea, and Sonia has some data on this as well from CDC, religious exemption rates were somewhere less than 1% on the average in the 1990s. However, they've been on the rise in various states, and I believe in many states, probably most states. In Oregon, by school year, you can see that right now we're almost at 4% overall. However, we have some pockets, and I'll show that to you in a second. So the purpose of our study is to identify factors associated with apparent claimed religious exemptions in Oregon, and then to evaluate risk factor differences among higher and lower rate communities. Thinking about this a little bit, one would imagine, and I think some of this is in the literature, that there are at least a couple of reasons why parents would exempt, partly because of convenience. It's hard to get to the record and get it to the school. But also there are vaccine concerned or hesitant parents, as well as anti-vaccine parents, and they sometimes show up on television and in the media. And also thinking about, well, how do parents make decisions about vaccines? It's an important decision. You know, your child's health is important. So we imagine that there could be community-level influences as well as household or demographic-level influences like income and ability to get health care, as well as the information sources that you have about vaccines, including from providers. This is a graph. It's a distribution of exemptions. On the y-axis are the number of schools. On the x-axis are the percentage of exempt kids in various bars, and you can see that a lot of the percent exemptions among schools clusters between 1% and 3%, and as you see the number of schools dropping down and the rates getting higher, there are schools that are way out to the extreme. Actually, we have schools past 8% on the right hand side. One school area is at 15%. Now, we conducted a case control study using, we used a multi-stage population proportionate sampling. We sampled cases and controlled parents from 21 exemption rate and census-based locale strata. And school districts with selected schools in them were asked to participate and provide parent school directory lists as well as student immunization data. And from all 28 strata, we selected approximately 3,000 exempting and non-exempting parents from public and private grade school and middle school children for the 2004-2005 school year, and again, we oversampled exemptors. The data were collected by Washington State University's research center, Survey Research Center, and by one school district and one private school opting to send the mailed surveys directly to their students rather than have the survey center do that. We pre-notified parents by postcard and then mailed the 43 question surveys in two rounds. The first round, we actually did a study within a study. Within strata, we randomly assigned parents to receive their first mailing by regular U.S. mail, by U.S. priority mail, or by regular U.S. mail with a small cash incentive. And then the second mailing, we learned that the response was a little bit better. So the WSU surveyed non-respondents were sent the incentive using the regular mail option. And then if WSU had them on the list, they would call the remaining non-respondents. So we asked a variety of questions about family demographics, health care for the youngest school-aged child, discussions between the parent and the child's health provider about immunizations, attitudes, beliefs about about immunizations, use and experiences of immunization exemptions, including past and future plans, and some other things that are on this list, including some questions about trusted sources and sources of healthcare. We reweighted the data to the original school-age population, and we calculated weighted percent frequencies and did statistical testing to examine the differences between different groups, exemptors and non-exemptors, and then we calculated weighted adjusted odds ratios for parent-reported exemptions using four separate logistic models. And I'll tell you, we first modeled everything for all parents, and then did some effect modification testing with comparing parents in the medium exemption area group with all the others, the high and the low combined. And then based on that model, we stratified and did three separate models so we could look at odds ratios for the parents in each of those three different areas. There's a thing called a nested model regression and wall test, and we use that to figure out the best to assess statistical significance of each item that we were looking at, and then we used a weighted goodness of fit and only selected good fitting models using STATA. Okay, we had a total adjusted response rate of 55%, and there were response rates differences between exemptors and non-exemptors, as you can see here. And we actually mapped the high school-based exemption rate areas, and the red boxes are identify the high school-based areas with high exemption rates, greater than 3% there, and the green ones are the ones with low exemption rates. And you can see that the boxes cluster kind of in northwestern Oregon, which is where the population center is in Portland. But you can see that there's clustering of the red boxes, the high exemption areas. But you can also see red boxes in other parts of the state as well as the low and medium rates. Now, reweighting the data, 6% of the parents signed an exemption, but another 14% told us that they eventually got their kid vaccinated, but considered an exemption, and the rest went ahead and vaccinated. There weren't that many differences demographically, but I picked this slide just to illustrate that. The column on the left are the exemptor, it's the exemptor column, and the column on the right is the non-exemptor column. And you can see that there are some statistical differences by employment status there. For example, on the right-hand side, top right-hand side, 30% of exemptors compared to almost 46% of non-exemptors worked full-time. On the bottom left, you can see a difference. 26% of exemptors compared to 17% of non-exemptors work for themselves. And there was an interesting group of unemployed looking for work, and there was a difference of 11% of for exemptors and 3% for non-exemptors. That's an interesting group. We couldn't do much analysis with them, but it's a very interesting group. Now, for some of the factors that ended up in the model, I just wanted to show you the differences. So, among exemptors, 22% of exemptors had a childbirth at a non-hospital alternative birth setting, compared to 3% of non-exemptors. 24% told us that they had no or slight trust for their local doctors, compared to 4% of non-exemptors. The flip side of that is that 9% of exemptors, compared to 32% exemptors, told us that they had no or slight trust for alternative or complementary providers for health. Exemptors, about 50% of exemptors compared to 13% of exemptors preferred naturopathic health care for themselves. And 25% compared to 2% of exemptors reported that their youngest school-aged child usually received naturopathic health care. a similar percentage in difference were among those who said their youngest child usually received chiropractic health care, and there was about 30 or 40% overlap. in terms of relying on print materials, and that's books, newspapers, the internet, we actually were a little bit surprised. About 30% of exemptors compared to 50% of non-exemptors said that they did rely on those print materials. Among those exemptors were 85% of exemptors said that they heard or read about vaccine hurt children, and compared to 70% of non-exemptors. So that story is out there. It's a little bit higher among exemptors. And then 55% of exemptors compared to 15% of exemptors said that they knew someone with a vaccine hurt child. Now, in terms of beliefs, we had six different questions, and I'll go down the row a little bit, or down the rows a little bit here. But you see that I want to point out the percent exemptors are pictured with red, and the non-exemptors are pictured with yellow. The top two rows are actually protected factors. You can see that more non-exemptors compared to exemptors believed that it was important to get all shots, that the benefits of vaccines outweigh the risks. Then it flips. More exemptors think that it's better to, the natural disease is better than getting vaccinated. The story about autism is out there. You can see about 60% of the exemptors, compared to 20% of non-exemptors, think that vaccines or autism is caused by vaccines. And about 70% of exemptors said that vaccines are given to young, compared to about 20%. And a similar pattern for those that believe that vaccines overwhelm the immune system. We created a belief scale with all six of those questions, and then plotted the distribution for exemptors, again in red, and compared that to the distribution for non-exemptors on that scale. And you can see that in the what we're calling the anti-vaccine group on the very left-hand side, there's pretty much only exemptors in that group. And then as you move towards the right, you have folks that we're calling our vaccine hesitant, then a neutral group where there's a mix of the two, and then on the other side, primarily non-exemptors are in the pro-vaccines, fall on the pro-vaccine scale, but there are exemptors in that group as well. So let's look at some logistic models. Excuse me. In the models, exemptors were more likely, or two times more likely than non-exemptors, to say that they knew someone with a vaccine hurt child, four times more likely to say that they had one or more childbirths at a non-hospital alternative setting, three times more likely to say that they have no or slight trust for local doctors in their community for health information, and it's borderline, it's not really significant, but I left in the model 1.3 times more likely than non-exemptors to prefer naturopathic health care for themselves. Looking at the belief scale categories, you can see that the top group always or most, always or most of the time strongly agreed with anti-vaccine beliefs. So this is the anti-vaccine group, that group on the very right, left-hand side. The exemptors were 15 times more likely to have those beliefs than non-exemptors. Moving a little bit further to the right on the scale, you can see that exemptors also were two times more likely to have less consistent but still nonetheless anti-vaccine or vaccine concern beliefs, the vaccine hesitant group. And then on the flip side, exemptors were 20% less likely to strongly agree with the pro-vaccine belief concern statements. Still in the same model, left in the model, we still picked up exemptors being four times more likely to say that their youngest school-age child usually received chiropractic health care, and they also were 40% less likely to rely on print materials than non-exemptors for health care information. I'm not going to show you the three models that we did for the vaccine-specific, the high, low, and medium, the parents in the high, low, and medium areas, but the factors that were statistically significant in terms of effect modification are shown here from those models. And you can see that in the high exemption column there, the parents in the high exemption area, parents, exemptors were nine times more likely to have anti-vaccine or to agree with those anti-vaccine belief statements. But in the medium exemption area, they were 13 times more likely, and that was statistically significant in the model, to have those beliefs. In the low exemption area, we started to run out of numbers, so we have to be cautious with that group. But if we had enough numbers, it looks like there's a bit of a trend with an even greater risk if you have those types of beliefs. A similar pattern for the other factor, knowing someone with a vaccine hurt child, again, in the high exemption area, exemptors were three times more likely to agree with that statement or know someone, say that they knew someone. But in the medium exemption area, we have those exemptors were nine times more likely to state that they knew someone with a vaccine hurt child, and we really ran out of numbers. I don't think there were that many numbers in the low groups, so that wasn't significant. So there's there's strengths and limitations to the study. Our response rates were lower than we had hoped for, but looking at recent studies, they're somewhat in line with the lower response rate trends that we're seeing among people. People are getting surveyed a lot. We wondered if some exempting parents were selectively participating related to their particular concern about vaccines or exemption-related concern. But on the other hand, we had a very large study. We used multi-stage sampling, post-stratification, to enhance the representation of parent groups. And the responses, looking at the responses for the parents that did respond, reflected quite a diversity of beliefs and experiences. There were some potential risk factors that we couldn't explore just simply because of numbers. Okay, thank you. And parent beliefs, actually, thinking about this, parent beliefs may have occurred after the exemption and the vaccine decision, since beliefs can actually change over time and firm up after a decision to exempt has already been made. So we have to be careful with the results here. Now, what are we measuring? One might imagine the parent is reflecting their experience watching their child react to a vaccine, or the parent is remembering their experience being the kid that fainted because of the big needle. Our findings support the hypothesis that beliefs about vaccines are more important than convenience. And our findings also suggest that some risk factors influenced exemptions differently in high, low, and medium rate areas, and that may indicate that there are some area-level differences that reflect some underlying community-level differences in vaccine beliefs and norms. Perhaps there's a wider diffusion of vaccine concerns and myths in the high exemption area, for example. Some of the other factors that we asked questions about actually fell out of the model, and they actually may indirectly influence exemptions by directly influencing the beliefs that we were measuring. So that needs to be looked at. And finally, we need to sort out the factors associated with being on the fence or considering exemptions versus just claiming them, because we may actually have parents that move between that group depending on what they're thinking at the time. And of course, we need prospective studies to figure out the cause and effect piece and what the power of what we're measuring really is in terms of vaccine decisions.